Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Sounded like Katrina's drummer went on strike there for a second.
Yeah.
April Fool. All right, let's get it out of the way. Travis, all right, you know I don't like April Fool's prank humor.
Right.
What, did you tell people you were booking Rachel Maddow's show again? Get out. Former President Jimmy Carter is not on. Look, he even got a prop book as if a former president's going to come on this show in a half an hour.
He might.
Oh, Travis.
Stay tuned and see.
This is Jimmy Carter, April Fool's.
It's Jim, right? You booked Jim. He's going to go out there and call in.
I just built a house for you. You're welcome.
All right. Yes, we do. We have former president coming up in a... Also,
how about
for you, Jim, smoking hot race car driver, Leilani Munter. Do you know who she is?
No, I don't.
She's what is her motto? Never underestimate a vegetarian hippie chick with a race car.
Wow.
She is a number...
She's like a Hawaiian-Austrian.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the whole that she drives in her real life, a Tesla. She's a big environmental activist.
Wow.
Awesome.
Does she race an electric car?
I don't believe so. We'll ask her that.
I don't think they do that.
I don't think they can yet.
They'd have to all be electric.
Well, all right.
But anyway, she's fascinating. And because, by the way, we were just talking about New York Times yesterday, front page. Horrifying. Charlie Pierce, who's also on today, writes about the latest climate change. It is just horrifying. It is literally the latest climate change report.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And as we were talking about yesterday, as they're finding in this search for the Malaysian plane, the ocean is just basically a garbage dump.
Full of crap, yeah.
Right. Right. By the way, Ed Schultz wouldn't take my call to find out what fishing crap is. I'm just kidding. I didn't call.
Okay.
What is fishing crap? What sort of things would be in there?
Nets.
Oh, okay. All right. And also...
Hooks.
Charlie Pierce and Bob Seska on the big show.
Sinkers, loaders.
Sounds like we're talking about something else.
I know. Something totally different.
But that's probably there, too.
It is. Well, it is a big toilet. That's the whole consent. The ocean's a big toilet.
Yeah.
All right. So, and Bob Seska has a great piece that I love. We know a little something about. You know, what do we say about this show? We are too liberal for conservatives,
right,
and too politically incorrect for liberals.
Exactly.
And so you've heard about this whole Stephen Colbert thing.
Yes. Oh, God.
Yeah.
I feel his pain.
Well, yeah, hello. I'm going to hell for Jim's Kim Jong-un impression if that's the case. But he writes a great piece about,
stop making fun of my haircut.
People, Stephen Colbert is not a racist. He is mocking the racist name of the Redskins, you know, foundation that he tried to form to reach out to Native Americans.
Anyway. Don't tell me I'm hypersensitive. I hate you and your ass face.
For God's sakes. And, of course, looky here. Why, what's that, Chris?
What?
AP is reporting that the healthcare overhaul on track to beat expectations with more than 7 million Americans signing up for health insurance by the deadline.
Well, that's just proof that it's a total paradox.
Right. Or, as Ted Cruz says, the number of people insured is actually going down.
Going down. Yes, that's less, not more.
Yeah. That's I believe.
And I do not like green eggs and ham.
Charlie Pierce writes about that today. That is their new thing, is just to deny the math. They did that on...
Math is a liberal bias.
Right, on Meet the Press, and on they just said, no, they're cooking the books. Those numbers are not.
What's your proof for that?
Remember they said that about the jobs numbers before the election? No, they are. In fact, they were right. They were revised upward. They were actually wrong. The big news was... Yeah. Remember that? They were like, Russia's like, they're cooking the British numbers. They're bugging you. Trust me, after the election, they're going to be revised downward, my friends. Yes, and after the election, they were revised upward, so it was actually lower than the duck. Okay. Jim Messina tweets, fact of the day, those signing up for Obamacare have seen premiums 15% cheaper than the CBO anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
So that part's not working out for you either, catastrophic failure. Premiums going through the blah,
so
blah,
it's
blah.
More successful and cheaper.
Right. Than we had
bad
even.
How.
Right. Right. And that's the only thing they've got to run on.
That's right.
In 2014. How's that working out for you? All right. Lots to get to, obviously, about Obamacare. Unbelievable guest lineup today. Very, very exciting.
Huge lineup.
I came down. I couldn't believe this was my show. I thought I was being pranked. We'll see if I am.
Could be.
Okay. Could happen. Okay. Tom and Cindy, they were in, Sexy Liberal Saturday Night. Staff, thanks to you, John and Carlos, for a great show Saturday night. You are truly loved in Madison. Oh. I think that was demonstrated at the meet and greet. You have a unique talent in that you make all your fans feel like friends. Well, that's because I am
drunk.
Right, and have no sense of spatial relations. There's various pictures up.
I love you. I know who you are, but I love you.
Jim remembers me at one party. We were actually on a chaise lounge out in my yard, and I just was, I was like on him like a koala, just, I love you. You're the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
That was tequila night, I think.
Right.
Well, you did that to my friend Jeff, and he's gay. So,
yeah, well,
I mean, you made out with him.
All right, listen, if you go to Stephanie Miller Show Facebook, the pictures, did you notice that I'm on almost every listener like a koala?
Yeah.
It's just, it is not any like sort of people skill. I'm just needy.
A koala hugging
needy.
Their face.
Right.
Yeah.
As you know, sexy liberal, the only time I actually leave the house.
Right.
So I'm very, very needy. As I said, I was the last person out of the meet and greet. They're like, oh, get out. Don't you have friends or family? Get out.
Don't you have a plane to catch?
Yes, I did. P.S., thanks for the good karma you brought, which I credit with giving us a Badger Final Four. Yeah, wherever sexy liberal goes, good things happen. Not to me, as Audra, who was there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she made a serenade for me of my travel woes?
Yeah.
Getting to Madison? Okay. Thank you, Audra.
Heading to the airport to go to Madison, Wisconsin.
Steffi was just trying to get on a plane.
Right.
Ah, 6 a.m. Got plenty of time.
But every time she'd get to the gate, they'd slam the doors in her face. So when
what the?
I can hear Steffi cursing the sky.
What the? Mother effer!
Well, it was a crap show.
Are you kidding me?
But
I gotta get
she made it to the Barrymore in time.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? You want me to run through this airport again on my tiny, brittle bird legs?
Mommy, help me.
You son of a mother.
Run.
Oh, God. This is bull.
Run.
Oh, f*** you. That was fairly accurate, but with a lot more swear words.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you, Audra. All right. And speaking of which, sexy liberal next one up, Chicago with the Mooks, with Mookage.
With Mooks and Vipers.
Can you put Mookage in baggage, I wonder? I don't know, or in the overhead. All right, so go to Sexy Liberal Facebook.
I got a bag of Vipers in the overhead.
Oh, and my costume designer from my disastrous late-night TV show was at the show. She lives in Madison, and we posted pictures of me and, I guess it's George Washington, and in some clock dress. I don't remember.
That's a Salvador Dali dress.
Who can remember? It was a, well, it's a clock, right, I had a clock hat.
Hello,
yeah, it was
Dali.
It was,
oh, you know what it was
it
for?
Was,
daylight
was
savings
Salvador,
time.
Okay, it was Salvador Dali's famous
the melting
painting.
Clock.
Yeah. Thing.
Right, yes. It was for daylight savings time, and I had other dancers.
The persistent was, persistence right. of vision is what
the persistence
right.
of vision.
What that painting is called.
¿Qué es esto en español?
I don't know.
Nathan,
okay,
no.
Right. Okay. All right, so, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, I well, because everywhere we go, sexy liberal magic ensues, as you know. And also, I'm better than Pip the Psychic Goat, who is a fraud. So all of you, Jim, I don't know if you use him.
I'm so disillusioned.
For your soccer bets. But
goat.
Pip the Psychic Goat sucks, everybody.
But the octopus was dead on. He was
yes!
Right.
Yes.
That, well, and now, unfortunately, is...
Dead.
Dead.
Where?
That's the problem.
He's, unfortunately, he's calamari.
Look, just wherever
calamari
sexy liberal
squid.
Goes, that's where your bet is. That's who's going to win. Just trust me. Where was our last show of 2013? Seattle.
Oh, that's right.
Seahawks. Okay. Just saying. Badgers. Final Four. A psychic goat is in a bad way this morning.
Oh.
I'm just reading from HuffPost. After everyone realized he's a fraud and a liar, Pip the psychic goat, it was in a soccer match, Jim. Mm-hmm. I can't even pronounce. Cheltenham, whatever.
Cheltenham.
Right.
That's where Brian Jones is from.
Anyway, he guessed wrong. Wrong. Pip the psychic goat.
Aw.
The folks who are training Pip hope that he will enjoy the same success as Paul the Octopus, who correctly predicted the results of 7 of Germany's games in the World Cup.
Either you got it or you don't. You can't train right.
Right. You can't exactly. It's like comedy. You're either
right.
you're born with it, you can't learn it.
Exactly.
Because it's there's timing involved.
Right.
Yes.
Thanks, Jim. Teddy Bear the Porcupine correctly predicted the better of two teams facing off in Super Bowl 48, the Seattle Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so did Sexy Liberal. But anyway, so nobody really is in the running to replace Paul the Octopus. But just saying. You're listening from OTB.
Good thing he wasn't wrong, because porcupines can get a little prickly.
Hey! No, you didn't. Really? You did. No, you did. Yeah, you did. All right, could I have some love music? Because speaking of animals, you know what? Fred is starting to get more love letters and fan mail than all of us put together.
Which one is this?
That's Fred.
Okay.
Oh, my God, stop asking that. Frey's half of Max's size.
They're both
or
giant white dogs.
Carlos calls him cruise ship.
He's lying on his side. How can I tell how big he is?
Okay. Kat writes on staff. Is it love? Oh, this is Bo Biden. Remember?
Bo Biden. Yeah,
she's
Biden.
A Great Pyrenees name, Bo Biden. Dear Fred, I don't know if I can be in gay love with you since my balls were removed at 8 months. But the way you roll your eyes when the man pets you makes my pimento show.
What?
Pimento.
Oh. Ooh.
I'm thinking I might be bisexual. What do you think, Fred? See you in my dreams. Bo Biden pimento. from Massasa, Florida. Oh, look how handsome and romantic Bo Biden is.
Bo Biden.
Okay.
Smiling.
All right. All right.
Makes...
Just let it go.
I can't. Something like that?
Those one of those on the bubble. Should I read that? And then you have to like shine a spotlight on it.
I can never enjoy a martini again.
All right. So that just happened.
Right.
And in like 10 minutes, a former president will be on the show. So you can't get that kind of magic at just anywhere. All right.
And we're not talking Millard Fillmore either. We're talking about a successful president.
Yes, former President Jimmy Carter on the big show coming right up. All right, 19 minutes after the hour, we roll along on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call Stephanie now. She's easy. 1-800-STEPH-12. Stephanie Miller.
They play this at Gitmo, right?
Yeah.
To get people to talk?
Yep.
I thought so.
All right. It's replaced waterboarding. 24 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Vice President Biden yesterday on Rachel Ray.
Any young person listening, if you don't need this for your peace of mind, do it for mom. Do it for your dad. Get health coverage. Do it for mom.
Do it.
Do it.
Fred says do it.
Yep. And apparently they did it.
Yeah. I mean, this is hilarious. Charlie Pierce writes a great piece. We'll talk to him next hour about that. This is what happens when Republicans are confronted with this. They just go into, like, denial of math.
Yeah.
Just like their climate change and science denial in general. It's like,
no.
No, they're cooking the books. Really?
Let's see the books.
Yeah.
What sauce do they put on it?
Yeah. Or, as I was saying, or Ted Cruz said, he bases it on nothing. No, the number of people getting health care is going down. Although, if
he didn't produce numbers to back this up?
Actually, I have some. Here it is. Let's see from the L.A. Times. Yeah, yesterday, at least 9.5 million people previously uninsured have gotten health insurance since Obamacare started. That's actually a lot. Okay. So,
up is down.
Yeah,
and
everybody's made such a big deal about this 7 million number, and of course, as it turns out, it's going to be more than 7 million people.
Oh, well, see, he lied about it. Ha ha, it's more than 7.
I'm sure they'll come out today and say April Fools. We're just kidding. Remember there was one Republican we played, I can't remember, from a Sunday show that said it's in single digits.
Right.
People that have signed up for Obamacare are in single digits. Right.
Right. Millions of single digits.
Right. Right. Okay. Hey, how about this headline? Obamacare enrollment drives secret weapon radio.
What?
For months, the media story of how President Obama sold Obamacare to America has starred unconventional outlets like Funny or Die, unconventional pitches like Mom Jean's message for Twitter, unconventional sales reps like Kobe Bryant, on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
A look inside the Affordable Care Act's all-out enrollment drive shows for all the talk about social media and unorthodox strategies, the administration relied heavily in the final stretch on a century-old way to reach the public. Radio? Why, how antiquated
radio,
and old...
Radio,
and old I certainly hope we got some of that ad money.
Crickets.
It's been another edition of Liberals Just Don't Get It. See, the Koch brothers buy all these ads on Right Wing Radio to prop them up because Rush Limbaugh scared away all the advertisers because of the Sandra Fluke thing, which is hilarious. But see, then they prop those shows up, whereas, like, Democrats, they don't buy ads on our shows because they're like, oh, we already have those people. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I? Bitter? Party of one. Your
Segment's
rated.
Are you okay?
Rated. Mm-hmm.
All right.
On Monday, senior Obama advisor Valerie Jarrett did her first radio interview at 8:30. By 6:30 p.m., she was on her 21st, bringing her total over the past 6 weeks to 82.
Wow. We weren't on that list.
Travis, did we get on that list? What? I weird. Did we? Huh.
Not on that list.
She talked to Texas and Wills and Snyder in the morning in Cleveland. What
Snyder
the?
In the morning?
Wills and Snyder.
Wills and Snyder in the morning? Showboy in the morning in Texas?
Showboy?
What?
That's the gayest radio name I've ever heard.
What?
Hey.
Overall, top administration officials and celebrity surrogates have taken part in some 300 individual radio interviews. Travis,
300?
Oh, is it too late now? Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I'm sure there's much bigger, you know, demographic there on Showboy.
Well, maybe if you weren't such an Obama apologist, they wouldn't feel the need.
Right, I guess I'm going to start talking right now.
Exactly.
So that he will call to bring me back around.
That's what you need to do.
Be like, oh, Mr. President, you had me at hello.
That's what you need to do. They felt like they didn't need to come on here because they already got you.
Well, listen, there's a lot of naysayers in the audience and in the room. They need to, this is the first place they should be coming on.
Your name is on the show.
And buying ads, lots of ads.
The Stephanie Miller Obama Apologist Show.
Why don't you shit, you pie hole? All right, Vice President Biden on. What, a cooking show? This is a cooking show.
Well,
we just made pasta, didn't we? A week ago.
It's a cooking and lifestyle show.
Right.
They are able to, even if the deadline closes, to stay in line. They can get into the system.
Yeah, that's right. That's what all the extension is about. People are already in the system, get to finish up is all. Huh. Who would be against that? Oh, I know. People that have always wanted it to fail. Okay, Jay Carney, the president's president.
Just like when you vote on election day, if you're in line and the polls close, you get to vote.
What?
Well...
Is that legal?
Not in some places anymore.
Oh.
No. All right. One more. Jay Carney. Yesterday.
It's about delivering on a promise that the Affordable Care Act embodies and that the president made and that many presidents prior to him tried to make.
Yeah. Yeah. So there. Neener. Nanny, nanny, boo-boo. I just said that. And now next, President Jimmy Carter.
Right.
As we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ancient archaeological evidence indicates that Stephanie Miller was much different before the discovery of alcohol.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 34 minutes after the hour. Well, just this morning, I believe George W. Bush finished another dog painting. And I'm guessing Jimmy Carter may already have won another Nobel Prize and written another best-selling book. This one, Jimmy Carter, A Call to Action. What an honor to say good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning, Stephanie. It's good to talk to you and folks all over the country, I understand.
Yes, let's hope so. Let's hope it's not just us. You know, it's funny. I think, was it Bill Maher that said to you, I mean, we sort of joke, but you have done, I would say, arguably more in your post-presidency than any president in our history. And yet, you know, I wonder how you feel about the, you know, the way the right wing still talks about you.
Well, I don't really let that bother me. You know, Rosa and I have had programs in 80 different countries around the world, and we concentrate on very important issues that nobody else is trying to address. And I think this one that I just wrote the book about is perhaps the most important issue that I've ever had to bring to the public attention, because it's the worst human rights abuse maybe in history, and it's really not known by people in this country or around the world.
Well, the name of the book, once again, A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. You do actually say this you think is maybe one of the most important issues of our time. Talk to us about it, because you've obviously, your work through the Carter Center, you've traveled all over the world, clearly, and you know, worked on so many of these issues. What moved you to write this book in particular at this time?
Well, we became familiar with the life of women, you know, all over Africa and Asia and Latin America and also the United States in our work. And I began to see increasingly clear how terrible the abuse was. As a matter of fact, we estimate there were about 40 million people killed in the Second World War, which is the worst conflict we've ever had. Four times that many little girls have been strangled by their parents at birth, or either aborted when they found out the fetus is going to be a female, because they want a boy instead of a girl, and because the government puts limits on how many children they can have, or either their family's too poor to feed the children. So that's just one of the things. In a country like Egypt, for instance, 90% of the women have had their genitalia cut. Mm-hmm. And in other countries, even a little bit more. And so this is what goes on, and not many people know or care about it. But I think even worse for us, at least, the people in this country, is what happens in the United States of America. The State Department is now required by Congress to make a report every year on slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And they estimated that last year 100,000 young girls were sold into sexual slavery in the United States alone. And Atlanta happens to be the number one trading post for sexual slavery. And two of the worst institutions for sexual abuse is the university system, almost every university in America, and also the military. So those kind of things take place, and everybody looks the other way and don't address them, but it's a horrendous blight on our society.
Well, and it's interesting, as a professor, I know that you regularly ask your class, when did women gain the right to vote in the U.S.? And inevitably, of course, students say 1920 with the 19th Amendment. But you say, you know, people forget it was the Voting Rights Act of 1965 when women of color just gained the right to vote.
That's exactly right. A lot of people in the classroom, you know, don't realize that that African-American women didn't get the right to vote until the Civil Rights Bill.
And I know you're obviously a deeply religious man, a Christian. You were a Sunday school teacher, right, for over 70 years, but you left your denomination in 2000 in part over the treatment of women. That must have been a painful choice for you. Tell us about that.
Well, it was. I had been a member of the Southern Baptist Convention all my early life. I was a deacon, and I was a Sunday school teacher. My daddy was before me. But when the Southern Baptist Convention decided in the year 2000 to make women subservient to men and to prevent them from being pastors or deacons or chaplains in the army, and they even prohibit women in some seminaries from teaching a classroom if a boy is in the class. So these kinds of things really made me feel that I was not in the right denomination. So Rosa and I now belong to a small Baptist church in Plains, Georgia, and we've had women pastors. My wife is a deacon, and in fact, half the deacons are now women, and so forth. So we give equal treatment in our church to women and men, just exactly the way Jesus Christ did and taught.
I mean, it is interesting that, you know, what people obviously over history have done in the name of God, but it's interesting that you go right to that in this book. What does religion have to do with gender inequality? Because around the world, it really is you took us through some of it: slavery, genital cutting, infanticide, child marriage, rape, honor killings, and clearly, you know, as you say, in places plagued with poverty, it's women and children who suffer most, right?
Yes, well, you know, in the Christian church, a lot of the policies were changed after the 3rd century. And now, of course, in the Catholic Church, which I really admire, they don't permit women to be priests or deacons. And I believe that St. Paul, and I already mentioned Jesus, St. Paul taught that everyone is equal in the eyes of God. Women and men, slaves and masters, and Jews and Gentiles are equal in the eyes of God. And Paul, in his 16th letter to the Romans, pointed out about 25 people who had been heroes in the early church at all levels of authority, and about half of them are women. So that was all changed more recently, and I think it's a very bad thing. In the Quran, by the way, it's very difficult to find any verses in the Quran that don't prescribe exactly equal treatment for men and women.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's refreshing to, you know, first of all, you know, it's not like you're saying you have a plan to fix the Muslim world. But what, in your experience in talking to women in those countries about their circumstances, how do you feel like what could we do to change them, or how could they change them?
Well, I mentioned, you know, the Carter Center has conducted about 100 troubled elections, and we have just as good a result in the Islamic world as we do in the other parts of the globe. In fact, the largest Islamic country in the world is Indonesia, and the Carter Center monitored their first two democratic elections there. So I don't think you can draw a distinction between Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism and Christianity and Judaism, because all of them in some communities distort the Holy Scriptures to warrant the men's being superior to men and abusing women and taking advantage of them economically and socially.
Mr. President, I know that you know, you've heard the news this morning that we already have passed the 7 million goal in terms of signing up for health care, for the Affordable Care Act. I know that you've said women have been the key to the Carter Center's success in every health project.
Yes.
Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, when we go into foreign countries, quite often in Africa, in those small villages in the jungle and in the desert, we have found in the last 35 years that quite often women are excluded from any sort of leadership position. But when we go in to eradicate a disease or to deal with a very troubling issue, even involving agriculture, we very soon find that the women play the key role in finding a solution and in leading the community. For instance, women are in charge of diet, obviously. They're in charge of sanitation. They train the children how to wash their faces and so forth. They give them the right food. And also, quite often, women, when we teach them how to deal with a disease, they are welcomed in their neighbor's house, whereas if we trained a man to do that, and quite often the men won't volunteer to do it, then the men have a hard time being admitted to a neighbor's house because he might be abusive or something like that. So we have found that when women are given a chance, they really exalt themselves and really show that they are natural leaders in almost every aspect of life.
It's interesting. I'm, you know, reading the background on, you know, again, where this sort of, this particular book came from. You compare your women's degradation to the double standard you witnessed in the segregated South during your youth.
Well, it was the same way. I grew up in Archery, Georgia, near Plains. We had one white family that was ours and about 55 African-American families. And it was in during the Great Depression. It was also during the time where separate but equal was the law of the land. And it was separate, but it certainly was not equal. So I saw then that a few white people deplored the racial segregation, but they didn't want to change it much because the white people enjoyed the advantages of superiority. You know, in economy, we had got the best jobs, we got the best education. We were the ones that voted, and the black people were not permitted to vote. We served on a jury, and they didn't. So we kind of took advantage of it and didn't want to make any real changes. But I saw from just an early childhood that this was a very terrible blight, not only on our black neighbors, but also on the white people ourselves. And, of course, the South has made great progress since those days when I was a boy.
At the end of the day, after you've, you know, completed this latest book, are you hopeful about the opportunities for women in the future?
I am. You know, I hope that every woman who's interested in helping her own kind will get the book and study it and join with me and the Carter Center in the rest of my remaining years to correct some of these problems. Because quite often when the issues are publicized, when people become aware of them, then they are ready to join in and maybe make some corrective action.
Speaking of women, do you have any marriage tips? Because you have one of the longest, best marriages I can remember in American politics.
Well, we just got 68 years so far.
Wow.
We're
still working on that. You kids are just getting
started. Congratulations.
Well, you know, Rose and I give each other plenty of space. You know, she gives me my instructions, and I generally carry them out. She's an excellent cook and a dietitian. We get a lot of exercise. And so, we try to make sure that before we go to sleep every night, we resolve any differences that might have arisen during the daytime. So we've learned, you know, to be more accommodating to each other as time goes on.
Well, getting your instructions, is that why A Call to Action is the name of the book? You actually, as a former president here, Jimmy, it's time to take the garbage out, stuff like that?
She treats me as equal.
The book is A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power. Former President Jimmy Carter, what an honor. Thank you so much, sir.
I've enjoyed being with you. Very pleasant.
All
thank
right.
you very
thank,
much.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Mr. President.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Did you ever think on this show I'd say goodbye, Mr. President?
So that was Jim the whole time?
Right.
Doing the voice?
April Fool,
right.
Everybody.
Wow. I built a house while I was doing it, too.
There's a little bit of Bill Clinton
no,
in that.
No, you did not build a house. All right, 45 minutes after the hour, right back on The Stephanie Miller Show.
It is a happening spot.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Stephanie Miller Show. A former president called me Pleasant.
That's the first time anybody's ever called
you
Pleasant.
Unpleasant. I think that is. That may be the first time that's ever been applied to me. He thought it was very pleasant. President Carter did.
Well, it was. I mean, you didn't make any fart jokes, so you had that going for you.
It was very
pleasant. Start him up for the rest of the show.
You didn't do anything dirty, which I appreciate.
Exactly. And that was a really good.
I like you.
Those were really good marriage tips. I think those crazy kids are going to make it.
You think so?
I think they're going to make it 70 years together.
68 years.
68 years.
That's amazing.
Right? Doesn't it feel like you've been with me 68 years?
Good Lord.
Okay. All right. So that was exciting, wasn't it, everybody? 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll-free from anywhere. Von Seal in Asheville already texted me. Great interview. Why, thank you, Von Seal. Merci. See? Obama administration, you can call in the show. I won't bite.
She'll be pleasant.
I'm pleasant. Can we get some new marketing stuff made up? Stephanie Miller, pleasant.
She's pleasant.
Jimmy Carter says pleasant. All right. Well, you know, listen, that's about the best I can hope for at this point.
I was pleasantly surprised because I heard some things about you.
I thought it would be a horror show. But. No, because I was just reading this article because, you know, I am very...
pleasant?
And bitter.
Oh, okay.
Which is a weird combination.
Yeah, I know.
Pleasant, bitter,
pleasantly
drunk.
Bitter.
What about how one of the... Hello. Oh, what's happening? Oh, what's happening? Geez. What's happening? Okay. I assumed I did that.
No, I did that.
Okay.
Because I'm decidedly unpleasant.
You are so unpleasant.
I know, right?
anyway, what was I saying? Oh, just because, you know, this is my personal bugaboo, but how one of the ways that Obamacare enrollment has gone over 7 million, they think, is old, the old-fashioned way. Radio! Radio!
Radio! Radio!
Oh, look at this, Chris. People have an attachment to their drive time choice and tend to trust it more than the bewildering array of news sources online or on television. How many times have I said, the American airwaves do not belong to me or Sean Hannity. They belong to the American people.
Right.
And there ought to be more fairness in broadcasting. The fairness doctrine's not coming back. I'm just saying, wealthy liberals, get busy. Buy some stations. Let's go.
Right.
All the radio groups are owned by right-wing...
asshats.
Right. Except for the couple that we're still on. We love you. Okay. but yes, yeah, so in our fine stations in Chicago and Minneapolis, owned by wealthy liberals, God bless them, everyone. One commentator said radio in many ways is more targeted than television is, and you sometimes see radio hosts be more advocates for a cause than their cable TV counterparts. It's talk radio, not news radio. That's right.
Uh-huh.
What a delightful place to sell a book or something else if you're a former president or whoever you are. All right.
Millard Fillmore's online, too.
Yeah. Okay, great. Hello? All right. Yeah, there's something about, by the way, liberals succeeding at capitalism that makes right-wing go ape dump.
Yep.
You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to be communists.
Our latest
Sean Hannity said so.
Our latest sexy liberal hacking something thing, people got notified that the Albuquerque show was last night. It's not till May 10th. Go to sexyliberal.com or sexyliberal Facebook. They're finding new and different ways to try to sabotage us. Chicago coming up next, and there's only, I think, less than 20 VIP tickets left, the meet and gropes.
Oh, dear.
And these two are going to be there.
Right? Hello. Oh, hiya, Sandy. You, what you don't say?
What?
Chris LaVoy and Jim Ward, you're pulling my leg. What? No, you're not? OMG. I got to get working on my Chicago accent so I can have some fun with Jim.
Sexy liberals everywhere.
Whoa.
Oh, my gosh. Look at there. It's Chris.
Oh.
With Stephanie and Carlos, too.
Vipers.
John Fugelsang is going to meet and grow up with you.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been working on my Chicago accent. Wacka. Why? I just met a... And I've been powerlifting so I can arm wrestle with that gorgeous hunk of a man, Chris LaBroy. Yeah!
The Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tours. Next stop is the Chicago Theater.
Yeah.
April 24th, 8 p.m.
Oh, April
26th. 175 North State Street in Chicago, Illinois. 60601. And don't forget your pashmina and your bag of glass.
Okay.
It's there.
All right. Thank you, Audra. We're getting sabotaged by our own people. It's April 26th. April 26th. Oh, dear God.
April 36th.
Recut
right.
that, Audra.
It's April 96th.
What?
What? Okay. Danette in Georgia, the home state of former President Jimmy Carter. Hello, Danette.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
That was an awesome interview.
Oh,
and if the
you.
Obama administration continues to ignore you, right. I just don't know what I'm going to do.
Danette, I will not be ignored.
Well, this is obvious. This is obvious.
Yes.
This is obvious.
Yes.
I'm not going to be ignored.
I wanted to say that I'm so thankful that former President Carter, who is white and male and Christian, had the courage to stand up and say that Christianity is just as villainous as any other religion on the planet for the treatment of women.
Yes.
It's fabulous. I think yeah. it's wonderful. I'm a Christian, and I hang my head in shame when Christians go on their rant about how Muslims mistreat women. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Come on, people.
Yeah, exactly. He was our ecclesiastical MOOC today.
He was.
Until John Finkelstein
yes,
gets here
he
on
was.
Friday. You're right. And it's a very, it's a very sensitive subject. But, it really is. It's amazing because he covers, like, all religions, too. It's not, as you say, don't you just hate how the right continues to vilify him?
Yeah, and it's so disrespectful.
Yep.
I mean, it is just disrespectful. And he is just. When he said it doesn't bother me,
and he's
got a mission to do and he's got things to do, and he said he's got more important things to do.
Well, he's not. He's
to worry about them. I just think it's fabulous. It's
yeah,
really wonderful. He's awesome.
No,
he's not worry enough.
No, exactly. Yeah. I mean, right? Didn't that in relation to this latest thing in Russia? Oh, he's like Carter. Obama's like Carter. It's like, oh, you mean who didn't get us into any wars?
Yeah.
Unlike
yeah.
George, what should he be more like
exactly.
George Bush? You know, who
yeah.
just, like I said, who just finished another naked poodle painting or whatever the hell he's doing. Jimmy Carter's busy saving the world and winning Nobel Prizes.
A naked poodle
and
painting?
Negotiating
he does either pictures of himself naked or, I don't, dog, something, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You wonderful, wonderful, Stephanie.
I'm
just so very proud of you.
See?
Wonderful,
oh,
great
see?
Job.
See, I can class it up.
She's very pleasant.
I'm pleasant, you know.
She's pleasant. She's darling.
Pleasant and gassy.
And she's farterific.
Thank you.
She's wonderful.
Thank you, Danette. Thank you so much. Thank you. Finally, the respect that I'm entitled to. 58 minutes after the hour. We got Charlie Pierce coming up. We got much more. Don't go away. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hello, it's the Stephanie Miller Show, who, of course, Jimmy Carter called pleasant.
He wouldn't say that if you heard what we
yeah.
were talking about during the break.
I said, you, I'm pleasant, you...
Mm-hmm.
Shut your pie.
I think
hole.
I did tell you to shut up during that break.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Jimmy
did.
Bleeping Carter said I was bleeping pleasant, okay?
Right.
So shut the bleep up.
Big... Squeeze. Okay. Hey, today's show is kind of a liberal wet dream, isn't it?
A little
bit. We
just
talked to former President Jimmy Carter. Charlie Pierce coming up this hour with some hilarious stuff as usual. Leilani Munter, do you know who that is? I'm so excited about this. She is a professional race car driver and environmental activist. She tweeted at Travis, because Travis tweeted a picture of a Tesla, I think, with a see ya OPEC. And that's hers. It says F oil. And she's smoking hot. But she's amazing just about all this, remember the who killed the electric car?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what she's talking about, the race between oil and electric is on again.
Mm-hmm.
And, and she's betting on electric to win. It's going to save our planet, ladies and gentlemen.
I think.
Remember, yeah. our good friend Rick Overton does a great bit about all these people that are in heaven that
yeah.
have been assassinated, and what did you do? What did you do? And one guy goes, I invented a car that runs on water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Bill O'Reilly, during his talking points memo last night, said that if you're a true conservative, you would support Tesla. Like, what?
Like,
huh?
Uh-huh.
What?
All right.
We will talk to
yeah.
her about that.
By the way, Munter in German means lively and awake, which comes in handy if you're a race car driver.
Yes, yes.
Also comes in handy if you're pleasant.
Okay. All right. And Bob Seska. Just saying. Liberal wet dream. Really. Okay. And I bet it'll all be pleasant.
Oh, God.
And Munta.
Yes. All right. Oh, somebody sent me this for Billy in Texas and his ilk. If you became an independent because you're embarrassed by Republicans, but you still vote Republican, you're not independent.
Right.
Thank you. I am an independent who likes to listen to both sides and just stumbled across your...
Right.
There you go. Who'd you vote for? Romney, McCain, Bush. Oh, really? That's
I'm
very
independent.
Yeah. Yeah. That's incredibly independent. By the way, Borowitz has a great time.
Oh.
Sheldon Adelson says no Republican candidate worth buying. The casino billionaire and Republican kingmaker Sheldon Adelson met with several 2016 GOP candidates available for purchase over the weekend, but decided to buy none of them.
To all of them, he said, "Feh."
I don't want to spend millions on another loser, said Adelson, who purchased both Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney in 2012. The casino magnate was scathing in his assessment of the candidates he declined to buy, calling them a third-rate grab bag of has-beens and dimwits.
If only.
This is so pathetic. Scott Walker, I light a menorah. Addition to my...
All three candles. What? There's more?
I named my son after something Jewy in the Bible. What? My wife and I played naked ring toss with bagels. No, right. Just, you know what, Scotty? Just, oh, you're pathetic. I have military credibility because I'm Commander-in-Chief of the National Guard in Wisconsin.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my
really?
God.
Okay. Aye.
Aye?
I don't know.
That's Navy.
Captain,
that's
whatever.
Navy.
Whatever.
Captain? What? What are you talking about?
I was saluting. That was my salute. Not so good.
No.
Okay.
Good Lord, no.
All right. Here's the other good news is they still have, you know, they still have spectacular candidates, Jim. So it's too early to get complacent because, for instance, out here in California, running for governor, no kidding, Glenn Champ. He is a champ. Have you heard of this guy?
He's champing at the bit.
He is this is not from The Onion.
Okay.
A registered sex offender.
All right.
Good. Okay. So far, so good.
Who spent more than...
At least he's registered.
Right.
Not a casual sex offender.
No.
Not an amateur.
No,
He's not pro.
He's not freestyling. He's, yeah. Spent more than 10 years in state prison.
Nice.
Convicted of assault with intent to commit rape and voluntary manslaughter.
Oh.
Among the other crimes on his lengthy rap sheet are carrying a concealed firearm and loitering to...
Loitering. Well,
to solicit a prostitute.
That seals it, if he's been loitering.
The 48-year-old Republican...
Of course.
...did not... directly address his criminal past when he spoke to the California GOP. I'm guessing he didn't. He just don't speak.
That's not important right now.
It's a Republican thing. It's in the past.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And guess why it doesn't matter? Guess who he found?
Jesus! Of course. Jesus makes everything better.
Yes. I bet you he has one of those Hello Kitty Hobby Lobby crosses.
With cutie patootie where Jesus' feet would have been nailed.
Oh, my God.
Everything's better.
Thank God for Ruth Pundit. I would have thought he made that up. He did not.
Wow.
There is a cross that Hobby Lobby sells. It looks like you could crucify a Hello Kitty on it.
Mm-hmm.
What's it that I can't remember? Oh, there's
Giggle.
Giggle. It says Giggle, where Jesus' crown of thorns would be.
Been.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think it says Daddy's Little Girl, where one of his hands would have been nailed.
Mm. Right. In an interview, he said, "I found the Lord." When I got arrested for picking up the prostitute.
Well, that's convenient.
Right.
After the prostitute, he found the Lord.
He called the voluntary
He found the prostitute first.
Right.
Then he found
the
Lord.
Then
the
Lord. Well, listen, why quibble over the order? He called the voluntary manslaughter case in which he pled no contest after hitting man with his car a tragic accident. For which Jesus has presumably forgiven him.
Sure.
But not the man who was hit by his car.
Just pick that guy off your windshield.
Mm-hmm.
He is obviously clumsy.
A little Windex will get that off.
Wow. All right. In other right-wing world news, did you know, Jim, you know there's obviously a very big gun rights movement, the NRA, et cetera. Now there's a knife rights movement.
Oh.
Isn't that neat?
Fantastic. So you can defend yourself against the guy with the gun.
Right.
Which...
This is great. Now there'll be no regulation. You can have a samurai sword in the supermarket. Just, that was my cantaloupe. Oops, sorry.
Sorry.
The Tennessee General Assembly.
Sorry. That was my head.
The Tennessee General Assembly's decision this week to repeal the state's ban on switchblades revealed the existence of a budding knife rights movement. Thanks in large part to Knife Rights, an 8-year-old, little-known knife advocacy group. Because we're not armed enough. This is great. It's modeled after the NRA. It's a bill that eliminates limits on knife length and overrules any town or city knife regulations. It's now on its way to the Tennessee governor's desk. How about that? One big John Belushi skit. So now you'll be more likely to get shot or decapitated. Cheeburger?
Cheeburger, cheeburger, cheeburger.
Okay. Sue in Rockville.
Turn you into cheeburger.
Yeah, exactly. Summarize. Hello, Sue.
Good morning. This morning I'm still on the Beltway, which is a nightmare of its own. Look, two things. I want to tell you guys, that was a wonderful interview. Steph, you were so gracious.
Thank you.
I listened to Carter on Letterman. I saw him on Colbert. But you were outstanding, and so was he.
Thank
and boy, are we lucky.
Thank you, Angel. I am incredibly pleasant, as you know.
Now, and the other thing I do need to say before I lose you on this interminable road is that I think we should all write to President Obama and tell him if he does not come on your show, we're not going to vote for him next time.
Nicely done. Nicely played, ma'am. Thank you. And please, call and issue empty threats. Why not?
Can I bring your attention to something?
Yes.
Do you know who Ken Jennings is?
Sounds familiar, don't.
He was the guy, the really smart guy who went on forever on Jeopardy and won all that money.
Oh, right. Oh,
yes.
Right,
okay.
Right.
He is poking Michelle Malkin's Twitchy team with a sharp stick yesterday today.
She does not like that.
Yesterday he tweeted, quote, "Make sure you guys sign up for Obamacare today. LOL, I was so dumb in mortal life. What was I thinking, you guys?" Signed, Andrew Breitbart's ghost.
That's going to make her head explode.
Oh, yeah.
She is notoriously touchy.
And the Twitchy team has just gone ape dump on him. And so he tweeted to them, "Hey, Andrew Breitbart's ghost said it. I didn't. Don't blame the messenger." And then this morning he said, quote, "Reagan's ghost and I were chilling Friday, and we were like, wow, so clear to us now how nuts the Tea Party is." Signed, Andrew Breitbart's ghost.
Come on, that's good. That is good. That's good.
If you're not following Ken Jennings on Twitter, you should.
You're good.
Well, follow FM show first, please.
Right, exactly. And then at Ken Jennings.
Thank you. Yes. All right. Speaking of Obamacare enrollment, which if you've just tuned in, oh my goodness, why, it's more than 7 million. I thought it was a catastrophic failure. That's what I'm told on Fox News every day.
Well, the more people sign up, the more of a failure it is.
Right.
It's only logical.
It's more than despite the disastrous website rollout.
Well, Fox News is saying it's a failure because we have no idea how many people are actually paying for it.
Oh, is that the new one?
That's the new one.
Okay. Mm. All right. The president's carny.
We are seeing a surge in enrollment. More than 6 million people have signed up. A remarkable statement given where we started back in October.
And that was as of yesterday morning, and there was a whole lot of sign-ups since then.
Yeah, and the AP reporting on track to beat expectations with more than 7 million signing up by the deadline. A reporter and the carny yesterday.
How many of those who have signed up have actually paid?
We don't have those figures. When we do, we'll get them to you.
Yes, and I'm sure there'll be some reason. The other thing they're doing is we were saying it's math deniers.
Yep.
We have climate science deniers, and now we have, they're like, no. Those, they're cooking the books. Those numbers.
Yeah. How many have actually paid? Let's see the books that you've been cooking.
Here we
go. What sort of sauce did you make for the cookbooks?
Senator John Barrasso, one of the math deniers.
They also won't tell you how many of these folks were just part of the 5 million who were canceled from their policies and are just now trying to get insurance back.
Right, so, that had to give up their crap policies because that's the whole point of the Health Care Act. I can't wait for Jackie Schechner this week.
Right.
It's
going to
be a festive Jackie's Healthcare Corner. God, unbelievable.
Yeah, but what about the people who were just dead and came back as ghosts and tried to get on the healthcare thing, and also aliens?
Right, and because the Democrats hate fetuses, how about all the fetuses that haven't been able to get health insurance? And see. So what about it?
Mm-hmm.
What about this? All right. Charlie Pierce coming up. We will talk to him about the math deniers, among other things. 19 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call Stephanie now. She's easy. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Stephanie Miller.
You got something on your shoulders. Is that something poking out there? You leave a hanger in your... Oh, I see. Okay.
See, Lady... She doesn't understand pop culture. Lady Gaga for a little while went... Like with these things on her shoulders right. That made it look like there were things sticking out of her skin.
Right.
Okay, have we gotten to that point in the show where you refer to me as she right in front of me? Like I like?
Tell her.
I could tell by the completely blank look on your face you had no idea what he was talking about.
Nice to mama. Okay. 1-800-STEPH-12. You are ignoring me like an old person.
Well,
you really are.
Okay, Grandma.
Grandma doesn't know pop culture. Oh. Don't make her feel bad. I'm sitting right here.
Well, you don't.
And I am pleasant.
You didn't know what he was referring to.
No, I did not.
Okay.
I'm befuddled by the world. John in Texas, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, John. Hello, John.
Question for you.
Yes, go ahead, John.
Since Obamacare is in, when is the government going to start regulating how much money a radio announcer can make like you?
Very funny. Huh? That's great. Nice. Good point.
Okay.
What?
Nicely done, sir. Wow. Ouch. Touche. Yikes. That was...
Wow. Right? Should have thought that through a little more.
That
yeah,
made
like
no
at
sense
all.
Because that's not mm-hmm. a comparison.
No.
Bags.
We're not part of the government.
Right. Mm. What?
Hey, you know what isn't fair? If I wanted to be a whiner about it, let's just say what Rush Limbaugh makes and what I make. And guess who has lower ratings than I had on my same station here in L.A. now? That's the big story in radio. I just heard Holland Cook on Ed Schultz's show saying that's the big story.
Yep.
And L.A. and San Francisco, when they're on our crappy little sticks that they were on, oh my gosh, his ratings have plummeted. I thought it was only liberal radio that didn't work.
But he's still making a gajillion dollars a minute.
What? Okay.
It's the Adelson Propaganda Fund.
All right. Sheldon. Okay, at least on, this is the LA Times, at least 9.5 million previously uninsured people have gotten health insurance
yep.
since Obamacare started.
Well,
you see how
about that? Like it's a good thing.
Despite a rocky rollout, Jim, and determined opposition from critics, it's already spurred the largest expansion of health coverage in America in
Why
half
was
a century.
Why was I not informed of this? It's an Iraqi rollout?
In half a century, national surveys and enrollment data show. All together now. Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama.
Seriously, thanks. As the law's initial enrollment period closes, at least 9.5 previously uninsured people have gained coverage. Some have done so through marketplace created by the law, which is that's where the 7 million
right.
figure comes from that we have already surpassed. Some through private insurance, others through Medicaid, which has expanded under law in about half of the states, except for the ones with Republican douchebags.
Wait till government steps in and tells you how many things you can...
You know, that's actually a dandy idea. Now that I think about it, that fine American that just called, radio salaries should be regulated based on ratings, because then
yes.
I can make him more than Rush Limbaugh.
$1 billion.
That's a dandy idea.
Huh.
Let's run that by Rush.
Okay.
Okay. John, I don't know why today is Animal Planet Day. Look!
Oh.
That is Lulu Ledoux.
Lulu.
Lulu Ledoux.
Let's see. John says, Steph, hi, this is our new puppy, Lulu Ledoux. As big fans of the show, we struggle to say her name without doing Jim's Tom Brokaw impersonation.
Oh, I do.
We thought we'd share it, since it intersects with two of your favorite things, puppies.
Who is not a poodle.
Puppies and Jim's impressions.
Or opso.
If there was a box of wine in the picture, we'd hit the trifecta. Oh, it's Lulu Ledoux. And now, Jim, to the Malaysian plain.
Oh.
Then from Kuala Lumpur.
Kuala Lumpur.
Come on, play along. Yeah, we were saying this yesterday, and this goes to a lot of these environmental things we've been talking about lately. And we had talked about this when there was a great piece about a guy that had sailed the world's oceans all his life, and he just did a whole piece on him. He just said that the oceans are sick. They're full of garbage. And this is what they're finding in this all of these satellite images so far. It's junk. I mean, it is disgusting. Even the most far-flung stretches of ocean are full of garbage. Yep. None of it proved to be debris from the missing plane, just ordinary garbage swirling around in the ocean. You have garbage from Australia, from Indonesia, from India, said an oceanographer. There are small vortexes that are mixing up the debris like stirring in a teacup. Yeah. A science writer referred to the search for the flight as a needle in a garbage patch.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone thinks there's anything wrong with that?
There's still stuff from World War II down there.
Yeah. We will talk to Charlie Pierce about that, the New York, the new climate change study that's just out, and much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, she's got freckles and braids and a bandage on her knee and a tooth out. And all the boys in the first grade are crazy about her.
I don't understand that. She sounds wow.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it.
The dog is in the way of the door. Natan can't close it.
The dog is the door stop.
Oh, the home studio. Natan, a fabulous television director, and what was I just bitching at him about?
His parking.
He's a bad parker. I'm just saying.
You know who else is a bad parker?
Like this far from the curb.
Dorothy Parker.
Halfway into my driveway. Whatever. Am I like out of frame? Am I like this?
Because
he's probably a much better director than he is a parker. That'd be funny if like half my face was always in there. Because he parked the camera in the wrong place.
Your face is too far for the curb.
Okay. All right. Kids, it's that time on Tuesday when we like to say Christmas.
There's only one man now that understands, and that's the author of Idiot America.
Pierce. Pierce. Charlie Pierce, political columnist for Esquire.com.
Why is everybody always laughing with me?
Good morning, Charlie Pierce.
Well, now that you're being sucked up to by presidents, you don't have time for me, I guess.
Yes, I just like a little more respect.
You're pleasant, young lady.
Pleasant.
That's first word that comes to mind when you think of me, right, Charlie?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding?
I was reading the front page of New York Times story yesterday, and it really was, it is so bad, right, the climate change study, that you're just like, how other than that, how else was the play, Mrs. Lincoln, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, now, you know, they're pointing out, and I think, you know, this is not really debatable, that people have no food, they get hungry and cranky, and they're liable to start wars.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's called the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a UN group that periodically, so as you say, this will be the latest report for people to ignore,
mm-hmm.
But I mean, it concluded, I guess stuff we know, Charlie, but, you know, you run it down. Ice caps are melting. Sea ice in the Arctic is collapsing. Water supplies are coming under stress. Heat waves, heavy rains are intensifying. Coral reefs are dying. Fish and many other creatures are migrating toward the poles, in some cases going extinct. The oceans are rising at a pace that threatens coastal communities and are becoming more acidic as they absorb some of the carbon dioxide given off by cars and power plants.
And it's all those scientists who want grant money.
Yeah, it's those greedy scientists again.
Yep.
I mean, it's horrific. I got to read one more piece. Throughout the 21st century, climate change impacts are projected to slow down economic growth, making poverty reduction more difficult, further erode food security, prolong existing, and create new poverty traps, the latter particularly in urban areas and emerging hotspots of hunger. I mean, it's just, and as you say, you skip down to the end, you say, as we know, there are two sides to every question, and both sides do it, so we should all just talk about it some more and learn to savor the delicate taste of sand.
But fortunately, the Pacific Ocean isn't being irradiated, killing off all... Oh, wait, it is.
Well, no, you guys mentioned something that has struck me about the massive coverage of the missing airplane.
Yeah.
My God, there's a lot of crap in the ocean.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
there's so much stuff in the ocean, it's complicating the search for an airplane.
Right. Can you imagine all of these satellite images, all so far, they're just junk in that remote a section of the ocean, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's not like this is the sea lane between, you know, the QE2 covers between New York and London or something. This is like the worst place in the world for sailors.
Yeah. And, as you point out, the scientists in this report emphasize climate change is not a problem of the distant future.
Right.
It is happening now.
Yeah.
Now. And, you say that the places like the Heartland Institute will, of course, refute this. And it gets... as you say, it becomes all part of that media narrative, right? And both sides do it, and oh, let's talk about both sides of the issue.
There are two sides to this debate, and one side is heavily financed by the oil companies, and is completely dedicated to not doing anything that will screw up its funding. I'm at sea as to what the, I mean. If the country keeps electing, if part of the country keeps electing Jim Inhofe, I don't know what we do.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, how do we move on this thing?
Well, and Charlie, I love the way you put it, that we'll all argue about it and learn to love the taste of sand. And I think what he means is we need leadership.
It's not like this is happening on the moon. It happened in California this summer.
Well, that's why we need leadership.
People want leadership, Mr. President. In the absence of genuine leadership, they'll listen to anyone who steps up to the microphone. They want leadership. They're so thirsty for it, they'll crawl through the desert toward a mirage, and when they discover there's no water, they'll drink the sand.
People don't drink the sand because they're thirsty. They drink the sand because they don't know the difference.
Sandy, listen, the water is rising behind.
I haven't had a setup like that in I don't know how long, Charlie Pierce.
I feel like Jim Ward was doing his boss there for a minute.
Not since high school volleyball have I had such a delightful set.
Excuse me?
What?
No, wait, just a setup for me to play that bit.
I've always
considered you to have a lovely set.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Aaron Sorkin, I got my first April Fool's prank out of the way early. I talked to my good friend Melissa Fitzgerald from West Wing, written by Aaron Sorkin, and I said, oh my God, did you hear they're doing a movie version of West Wing? I said, there's no fool like an April Fool.
You're such a pleasant young lady.
I'm pleasant.
Oh, by the way, big props to Chris Lavoie for pointing out the Ken Jennings Twitter feed, by the way.
Oh, my God. Right? You know who pointed that out first, though?
I was falling down laughing. I mean, talk about poking the bear. This isn't poking the bear. This is reaching into the bear's mouth and pulling his teeth out with pliers.
It really is. Yep. Actually, Rude Pundit discovered it last night, and I immediately went to it and retweeted it out to everybody. It's amazing.
It's astonishing. The Andrew Breitbart ghost is absolutely astonishing.
Yes.
Hilarious. Charlie, we've been talking about, obviously, the Obamacare numbers, and you noticed the same thing I did. The GOP's last line of defense on Obamacare, you write, it's not just climate deniers, it's math deniers now, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the latest thing. Now, Rick Santorum is pointing out that all the people who are signing up are pretty much deadbeats who will never pay. And John Barrasso is saying it doesn't matter because the numbers are wrong.
Right, they're cooking the books. Right. And I said earlier, Charlie, didn't they say that, Rush Limbaugh and his ilk, of the jobs numbers before the election? They said they're cooking the books.
Oh, absolutely. It was Jack Welch. It wasn't Rush. Right. Rush picked it up. Mm-hmm. But it was Jack Welch who was tweeting all over the place that the job numbers were cooked.
Right. Right. Unbelievable. You say the figures seem to undermine, at least weaken, the argument that Obamacare is a catastrophic failure. So, as you say, when they're confronted with that, Ted Cruz, you said Senator Ted Cruz says the number of people without insurance is actually rising. I mean, again, both sides of the issue, right?
Right. Well, I mean, that and the fact that you've got a substantial portion of the election, of the electorate living in the bubble, right. Living in what Bill Maher calls the bubble.
Yeah.
With its own facts and its own science and its own, natural and physical laws.
Yeah. Well, as you say, it's really one side of the debate just has its fingers in its ears, just saying la, 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 la.
I don't understand. I really, honest to God, don't understand why some Republican doesn't get on the other side of this.
Right.
I mean, they can't all be in that endangered situation in their district.
Yeah.
Hey, we were wrong about this. It's kind of working. Maybe it's got some glitches. I don't like the idea of the government in there, but let's go along with it for a while and see what happens.
Well, that's why I agree
instead of no, your facts are wrong, and no, we should repeal it.
And that's why I agree with President Clinton, Bill Maher, mm-hmm. Ed Schultz. I just heard it say yesterday, just don't run away from Obamacare. Run on it. Don't
absolutely.
Be pussies like you normally are.
You have to be kind of careful how you do it, but you can certainly do it.
Yeah. Well, exactly. By the way, you also found the deep, rich vein of comedy in the courtship of Sheldon Adelson, as you write this week. This was pathetic, wasn't it?
Oh, it was hilarious. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas because it's entirely embarrassing. this is the world that Citizens United has given us. One guy can get every Republican candidate, pretty much every prospective Republican candidate out there to put on a monkey dance for him because he can finance the entire campaign himself.
Yeah, that was my favorite line of yours. This
week.
You say,
is my favorite.
You say
my
once,
favorite
a, once again, thank Justice Anthony Kennedy for helping to inaugurate this glorious new era of how we allow skeevy old casino gazillionaires to buy our elections.
Vegas, yeah. Baby, Vegas!
I mean, it, really, that is exactly it. And we talked.
I love Scott Walker going out there and explaining how he puts up a menorah every Christmas too.
Yes,
pathetic. Put that and tried to get military cred by saying he's the commander of the National Guard in Wisconsin.
Which he's been employing to keep his constituents away from him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like the Panamanian National Guard.
But you said, it's hard to surprise Charlie Pierce, I have to say, but you said you did not expect the 2016 Republican primary process to descend into low comedy quite so quickly. But, I mean, and then you had Chris Christie. Hilarious. Not the most graceful moonwalker, right? He had to walk back his occupied territory.
He uses the phrase occupied territories and then has to walk it back for 2 days.
But you said not. I didn't even hear this part.
Actually, it was probably Bridget Kelly who wrote that speech, actually.
You said long of the speech, he met with Edelson privately in the casino mogul's office in the Venetian, and he said Christie clarified in the strongest terms possible the remarks today were not meant to be a statement of policy. He misspoke when he referred to the occupied territories.
I didn't say them. It was David Wildstein throwing his voice.
Seriously, that has to be the saddest scene in the history of our democracy. Like. Jetson! And he goes trooping into Edelson's office. Oh,
well, no, it could get worse. I can hardly wait for the Foster Freeze primary where they all go there with an aspirin between their knees.
Yeah, this is just a sad state of affairs. But I mean, the whole, and Chris Christie, by the way, now that you mention that, I mean, he is really desperate at this point, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he should avoid any headline that contains the verb floundering, but he's really floundering.
Yeah,
yeah.
At this point now, the big money seems to be running toward Jeb Bush.
But I mean,
I don't think can change his last name in time for the primary. But maybe.
No,
Jeb, not Bush.
Jeb Brush, at a consonant.
Yeah,
Jeb Arbusto.
Charlie,
there we go.
The one thing I just wonder is, you know, did he so buy his own, like, media narrative, the love affair they were having with him, that he really thought this self-investigation at taxpayer expense was going to make it go away?
I think so. I think that happens to a lot of people. I think Paul Ryan has bought his own publicity, too.
Wow.
And I think it's something that you should have a guy on your staff who stands behind you, like that guy that used to be in the Roman victory parades, who would stand behind the general and tell him all glory is fleeting. There should be a guy standing behind every politician saying, don't believe what they're writing about you.
Yeah. Do you, what's your,
I mean, because he really has, I mean, he really does, he really appears to think he can brazen this out. And what he's missing in this kind of self-delusion is the fact that the base of his party doesn't like him anyway.
Yeah.
The only thing they like about him is that he's been attacked by the liberal media now.
Yeah.
That's the only thing he has going for him.
Now, I know you're no Pip the Psychic Goat, but do you think Bridget Kelly is going to get immunity and she's going to talk?
I have no idea. I don't know New Jersey politics. I'm no Steve Kornacki in that regard. But, I mean, if the investigators are actually doing their jobs, yes. And if Bridget Kelly wants to not be the scapegoat of this forever, yes. I mean, it seems to be to everybody's advantage that you get it.
Yeah, well, a good way to go about that is to call her a slut publicly. That's that's a good way to... Yeah,
an erratically behaving slut.
Yes, exactly. You know, I don't know how many times I've done that, because, you know, I've had some bad breakups. I've just willy-nilly shut down bridges, tunnels.
The entire track. Yeah. 405, right?
I shut down the 405
all by yourself.
You remember that time? That was a bad breakup.
By that time, you mean every morning?
Yeah, exactly. No, she closed it down with her own vomit.
Yeah, I did. That was in USC. Never mind. All right. Charlie Pierce, I love you. See you next week, honey.
This one took an ugly turn late.
Didn't it?
I'm pleasant.
She threw up grasshoppers on the 405.
Right. But it wasn't during a breakup.
Yeah. Well, as far as we know.
Who knows? All right. I love you, Charlie Pierce.
I told you not to date any bug eaters, but you wouldn't listen to me.
Oh.
Goodbye. Goodbye. I love you. Goodbye. There he goes.
Oh. Grasshoppers made with creme de menthe.
Ugh. Yeah. And by the way, there are pictures of that whole event where they're laughing about the whole bridge scandal thing. There's no one around them interfering them distracting them.
Yeah. Hilarious. All right. 47 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the political party line now. 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
Are you okay? What's going on over there?
I'm playing with my chair. I just lowered
That's
it.
That's what the kids are calling
and
it.
Then I, and then I felt like it was too kids' table. Okay, it's fine now. All right, it is the Stephanie Miller Show, 52 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number toll-free from anywhere. Wow, we are guested up today.
We are.
Former presidents and Charlie Pierce's and Bob Sestich's coming up.
And race car
hour.
Drivers.
And smoking hot female race car drivers that are also environmental activists. Yeah, I love her Tesla. She lives in North Carolina. She said every time she goes to the supermarket, somebody takes a picture of it. She has F oil on the back of it. She says electric's going to win in the electric versus oil. She said it's on. All right. By the way, speaking of awesome things happening on the interweb, not only Ken Jennings poking Twitchy with a sharp stick.
Oh, God, that is so awesome.
The new meme.
And it keeps going on.
Andrew Bart's ghost. He keeps... I love this one. Ted Cruz's Obamacare Facebook poll totally backfires on him. Right-wingers and the interwebs, not so much. Not so much with the social media.
Nope.
Last Monday, Senator Ted Cruz posted a quick poll on his, as you can do, the kids are telling me, on the face pages. Mm-hmm. On his Facebook page, asking his followers if they are better off now than before the Affordable Care Act passed 4 years ago. A week later, with the Obamacare sign-up deadline almost upon us, the unscientific results are in, and they likely aren't what Cruz was expecting. He neglected to use Facebook's official poll feature, instead asking people to comment with a simple yes or no. After 7 days, the post has accumulated more than 47,000 comments, with a startling number of people answering in the affirmative.
Computers, yes.
Yes, we like it.
Like it.
This is their worst nightmare. The way Facebook works, the comments with the most likes rise to the top of the post. As
right.
you can see, by viewing the comments on the post below, every single one of the most liked comments answers a resounding yes to Cruz's question.
Computer says yes.
Yes.
Damn it.
Yes. Everyone in my family has a pre-existing condition that ranged from minor to serious, Felicia Williams wrote. We were uninsurable on the individual markets. Now we've got great coverage through healthcare.gov. We did not get a subsidy, but it still fits our budget. Yes, best law ever, Lillianne Fuller wrote. Yes, yes, and yes. Hands off my Obamacare, Shelley Peterson added enthusiastically.
Let me rephrase the question. How bad is it? Holocaust or...
Yeah, he forgot to do the Fox phrasing on the question. It goes on and on from there. The one does not have to, quote-unquote, like Cruz to comment on his post, but the results of his quick poll indicate that many of the 651,000 people, by the way, so most of them, it became, look, that's almost like an orgasm. Yes, yes,
oh,
yes.
God.
Yes, yes. We're having an Obamagasm.
Oh,
yes.
God. They're all liars.
Obamacaregasm.
Oh.
Oh, no. Oh. All right. Okay.
I'll have what she's having.
Yes, Obamacare. Exactly. All right. We were talking to Charlie Pierce about this, but if you have not looked at this New York Times piece from yesterday, you have to. It is horrifying.
Yeah.
And this is what, you know, Charlie was saying, and it drives us all crazy. We talked to Eric Bollard a lot about it, but the media terms everything into there are two sides. There has to be two sides. There has to be. And there are not two sides to climate change at all. And this, you know, and they're going to dismiss this, right, because it's the UN, right, on
yep.
Fox. I can't even imagine how they probably didn't even report this, right? It's like, oh, yes, another climate warning to ignore.
Blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah, listen to these not-so-fun facts. Climate change is already having sweeping effects on every continent throughout the world's oceans, if we've been talking about this morning. Scientists reported Monday they warned scientists.
What do they know?
They're
just looking for a grant.
And they warned
he's buried in Grant's tomb.
They warned that the problem is likely to grow substantially worse unless greenhouse emissions are brought under control. They concluded that, hey, this is fun, Jim. Ice, as I said to Charlie, ice caps are melting, sea ice in the Arctic collapsing, water
Check.
Supplies coming under stress, heat
Check.
Waves,
Check.
Heavy rains intensifying,
Check.
Coral reefs dying,
Check.
Fish, many other creatures migrating toward the poles or going extinct.
Check.
Right. Oceans rising at a pace threatens coastal communities. They're becoming more acidic as they absorb some carbon dioxide given off by cars and power plants, which is killing some creatures and stunting their growth. Oh, good. We have a lot of mini fish.
Check.
Right, right. Organic matter frozen in the Arctic soil since before civilization began is now melting.
Yeah.
Aren't we awesome?
The permafrost. Yep. And so a lot of methane escaping, yeah, which is worse than CO2.
America. Yeah.
Well, it's not just America.
And that's going to make it really buggy.
No, it's not just America. I mean, India and China, this is just, the worst is yet to come, scientists said. In particular, the report emphasized that the world's food supply is a considerable risk, a threat that could have serious consequences, obviously, for the poorest nations. One of the chairman said nobody on this planet is going to be untouched by the impacts of climate change. You just think, you get this kind of stuff, you read it all the time, and you think, what is it going to take? He goes on, throughout the 21st century, climate change impacts are projected to slow down economic growth, make poverty reduction more difficult, further erode food security, prolong existing and create new poverty traps, the latter particularly in urban areas and emerging hotspots of hunger. The report also cites the possibility of violent conflict over land and other resources. Yeah. No kidding. Scientists emphasize climate change is not some problem of the distant future. As I was saying to Charlie, it's happening now. Now. The poorest people in the world who had virtually nothing to do with causing global warming will be high on the list of victims as climatic disruptions intensify, the report said. You're right, Jim. That's the other thing. It isn't just us. It's India. It's China. Guess what? We're all on the same planet. We got to do something.
No wonder scientists keep looking for a spare planet.
I feel bad for those really short island nations that are just going to get submerged.
Yeah. And the oceans have become our toilet. The Earth's getting ready to shake us off like bad fleas. 58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 6 minutes after the hour. Well, can I just say, this may be the coolest guest we've ever had, Jim, and we just had a former president on this morning.
Yes.
I'm just saying. Would you like the fun facts? I hope I'm saying this right. Leilani Munter is a biology graduate turned professional race car driver and environmental activist. Discovery's Planet Green named her the number one eco athlete in the world.
Awesome.
She is a recipient of Elle Magazine's 2012 Genius Award. I was up for that, wasn't I?
Oh, yeah.
Computer says no.
Last year.
No, I was not. Sports Illustrated named her one of the top 10 female race car drivers in the world. Since 2007, she's been adopting an acre of rainforest for every race that she runs. She's politically active, made several trips to Capitol Hill to speak with members of Congress on behalf of clean energy legislation. She's almost a lifelong vegetarian, was one of the first activists to arrive at the 2010 Gulf Coast oil disaster. She's been to Japan 3 times to document the dolphin slaughter depicted in, remember the movie, The Cove, the documentary. She races in ARCA, a development league of NASCAR. And Jim, this is for you. Extra dollop of cool. Her brother-in-law is Grateful Dead guitarist and singer Bob Weir.
Wow. What?
Her motto, never underestimate a vegetarian hippie chick with a race car.
Awesome.
Coolest guest ever. Leilani, welcome. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I had heard about you. I think you tweeted, first of all, I love the picture of you with your Tesla, and your license plate is F Oil.
Yes.
But I think, I think Travis, our producer, had tweeted something similar, right, about see ya OPEC?
Right. I think he tweeted a picture of somebody else's license plate with the Tesla, and so I wanted to share mine. And, I just got solar panels up on my roof last month, so I am now driving off of sunshine.
Well, yeah. Wow. I mean, it really is fascinating. We were talking earlier this morning about the documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember it.
And you wrote a great piece called It's On, Oil versus Electric, and you are betting on electric.
I'm absolutely betting on electric. I mean, the great thing about our cars, and, not everybody that has an electric car has solar on their roof, but even if they don't, that's not a problem, because as the grid cleans itself up and moves towards more renewable energy, our electrical grid also cleans itself up, and that means electric cars get cleaner. So it's really the only car that you can buy right now that, as time goes on, the car gets better and better for the environment.
You could theoretically turn your whole car into a solar cell.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but you make such great points in this piece, Leilani. You say, am I saying your name right, by the way?
Yep, it's Leilani, and then Munter, it sounds like two O's. So
yeah, Munter, it means lively and awake in German, which is helpful if you're a race driver.
Correct. How did you know that?
I lived in Germany for several years.
You know, Leilani, it's interesting. Some people might say, oh, that's a kind of a contradiction in terms. You're a race car driver that's an environmentalist or a clean energy person, but it's not really. I mean, and the way you talk about Tesla and the, you know, the race between oil and electric, I think explains that, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, I understand why people, when they first hear about me, are kind of like, you know, big question mark. How can you drive race cars and also fight for the environment? And for me, you know, my degree is in biology, and I find that it's the race car that's giving me a voice to talk to. There's 75 million race fans in the United States. If I didn't have that race car, I wouldn't have the ability to sort of have a voice to all of these race fans and talk to them about the Cove or Blackfish or electric cars or renewable energy. I just raced at Daytona with a renewable energy car that was promoting the use of wind, water, and sun. And if I was just another, you know, environmentalist and I wasn't driving a race car, I would not have the ability to reach this really large demographic of Americans.
That is well said, and I'm sure, you know, we've been talking all morning about this, you know, New York Times piece yesterday. I'm sure you've heard about it on this latest climate change report, which is just horrific. But you make such a good point about the powerful money and interests that are behind, you know, in driving even the media. You say three Tesla cars caught on fire this year, all due to high-speed impacts. Not a single person was hurt. By comparison, the USA has had more than 250,000 gasoline car fires in the past year and a half. Those fires resulted in 400 deaths and 1,200 serious injuries. And you said, which fires did the media choose to focus on? And I you're right. I think, oh, yeah, I remember that. I've heard a lot about this Tesla fire. I mean, and you absolutely make a good point about why that is. Tell us about that.
I mean, if you think about it, since, you know, for the last century, what have we been buying? We've been buying internal combustion engine cars. And what do you have to buy in order to use those cars? You have to buy gasoline. So these two very large systems called Big Oil and the established car industry have been in bed together for a century, essentially. I mean, we've had to use their products because we haven't had any other choice. And even if you wanted to do something else, it would be very difficult to do so. You'd have to, you know, I know there's people that have taken their cars and sort of worked on them and made them be able to run on, you know, a biofuel of some sort. But that's pretty difficult. Not everybody can do that. Now all of a sudden here comes an electric car company out of nowhere. They're already outselling BMW, Audi, and Mercedes in their price point worldwide. Mm-hmm. They haven't placed a single ad.
And by the way, it's received the highest safety rating possible, the Tesla.
Yep.
As you say, there's been no serious threat to the world domination of the oil industry. And you said, here comes a brilliant young entrepreneur who happens to be a rocket scientist who creates a compelling and sexy electric car that goes on to win every award under the sun. And that's Elon Musk, right?
Correct. I mean, he's a very smart guy. He, you know, he was one of the inventors of PayPal. He sold that and he used that money to invest in Tesla Motors, SpaceX, which is the space exploration company.
What a slacker.
And SolarCity. And he's been very successful in all three of those endeavors. And I have no doubt that, you know, Tesla is going to be hugely successful. They're stock is up like 600% right now. They are the first car in history to win Motor Trend Car of the Year by unanimous vote. And really just driving the car to me is the answer to the question, because once you drive a Tesla, all other cars feel like antiques. They are just superior.
Yeah, but it doesn't go vroom, vroom.
Right, it doesn't go vroom.
You need the sound effect.
I mean, they are, as you say, they're rocking the boat. Tesla's rocking the boat. And here's the part I love. They just wired nearly $500 million to the government, became the only American car company to fully pay back their government loan. And they did it in 9 years, 9 years early with interest, $25 million in interest, in fact, that went back to the taxpayers. So no wonder they're rocking the boat of these entrenched interests, right, as you say, the, you know, big oil and the big car companies.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're quite nervous. If they're not nervous, they should be nervous. Because I think Tesla is really, really changing the game. And, I think it's great to see a new company sort of, you know, flipping the industry upside down like this. And it's going to force all of the other manufacturers to, you know, go back to the drawing board and ask themselves what they've been doing wrong. And hopefully they'll realize, you know, that people do want electric cars, and we especially want electric cars that perform really, really well, the way that a Tesla Model S does, and they're going to start shipping the Model X, which is their crossover SUV, at the end of this year. So they're also putting up the Tesla supercharging stations. They're going up across the country. I think they've been opening something like 5 or 6 a week. We have 4 already in North Carolina, where I can charge my Tesla for free for the rest of my life. And it charges at 200 miles, you know, every 30 minutes approximately. So it's a really, really quick charge.
Wow. I wanted to talk to you. My most of my family lives in Charlotte area, and I thought I read this wrong when I first heard about this, but you talk about earlier this year in North Carolina, the state legislators trying to pass a bill that would ban Tesla from selling cars.
Yeah.
In North Carolina.
New Jersey did the same thing.
You're right. You said, as ridiculous as it sounds, North Carolina is trying to ban an American car manufacturer from selling cars in America. What, and as Chris just said, yeah, Texas, New York, Minnesota, Virginia, all trying to pass similar bills.
Wow.
And maybe you can enlighten me. How is this possible in America?
New Jersey actually just passed a bill so that Tesla is unable to sell electric cars in the state of New Jersey. So who's at work at this is the National Auto Dealers Association. They are fighting Tesla because Tesla sells cars directly to their customers, like Apple Computers sells their computers directly to the customers. You know, and this is because the way that this car functions, you know, there really is nobody else that can work on the car. They don't have dealers. You buy directly from Tesla. Most of the updates for the Tesla comes right over the wireless internet and is just an update, much like your iPhone updates itself with new software, so does my car. Huh. And then when I wake up the next morning, you know, there's a list of all the new things my car can do.
But you're going to need the undercoating.
That is so cool.
As you write, do not underestimate the power of the establishment and the money they can throw around to influence politicians, journalists, and campaigns. Because I'm just sort of, in basic fairness, I don't understand how they can do this. I mean, go ahead.
Their argument is kind of silly, but their argument is they're fighting to basically have that middleman. In the past, other manufacturers, the big three in the U.S. have had dealers that they sell their cars through, and then the dealers are the ones that are taking care of the cars and doing the oil changes and those kinds of things. You know, Tesla has very little maintenance. So there's not going to be very much maintenance due to the car at all. And these guys are fighting because they want to be able to have their piece of the pie. They want to be able to get a piece of that sales of Tesla.
You quote Gandhi. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And you say, that's why they're scared. This is what comes next. Tesla wins, and they will win because they have a superior product.
It's true, you know, because first they ignored Tesla. Nobody thought that any startup American car company could challenge the big three, because in the past, nobody else who tried it had been successful. And then when Tesla started turning heads, there were a lot of naysayers kind of laughing and saying, you know, there's no market for an expensive luxury electric car. It's a joke. It's never going to take off. And now that it's taking off, I think people are really starting to get nervous.
The oil companies must be going crazy.
Yeah, well, and you say they will win because the move to electric cars and sustainable transportation is an essential part of the evolution of humans to live in a way that doesn't destroy the world around us. And I just love how you phrase it. You say, grab the popcorn. This will be an epic battle. This is good versus evil, new clean renewable energy versus old dirty fossil fuels. You say, my bet is on Tesla Motors and Elon Musk. Who doesn't love a love story where the good guy wins? I hope you're right.
Absolutely. I have no doubt in my mind that I'm right. I think Elon is an incredibly smart guy. I think Tesla is an amazing company. And I think for anybody who has any doubts about an electric car, just, you know, sign on to TeslaMotors.com, sign up for a test drive, and all you need to do is get behind the wheel and you will change your mind.
By the way, good luck. You have a race coming up May 3rd in Talladega. It's like Talladega Nights with Will Ferrell, but except with a really hot, smart, liberal chick. and good luck with, I love all the stuff you're doing. You're involved in a new documentary, right, from the same team that did The Cove about the dolphin slaughter, right?
Yeah, so this film is called Six, and we're doing a work-in-progress screening at Tribeca next month. This movie is actually about the six mass extinctions that we're currently going through, much of which is due to the burning of fossil fuels, the acidification of the ocean, and climate change. We're currently losing, they estimate, approximately 30,000 species a year. Mm. And the normal background rate for extinction is 3 species a year. So we're at 10,000 wow. times that.
Wow.
This is the sixth mass extinction. They're calling it the Anthropocene extinction because it's caused by man. Anthropocene translates to the age of man. And so it's going to be, I think, a powerful film. It has a lot of the similar sort of covert undercover operations that you see in The Cove. And actually, I am driving a very, very cool, one-of-a-kind Tesla in the movie. So
wow, awesome.
Some people tune in.
Leilani, how can we help? Before we go here, how can we help, or what would you like to direct people to, a website or something?
So my website is just carbonfreegirl.com, and I post a lot of things on there about the work that I'm doing, whether it's clean energy issues or whether it's Blackfish. The race car that I'm running on the May 3rd race is raising awareness about orca captivity. I don't know if you saw that film, but right. CNN has played it quite a bit.
Yeah, I did.
It's a pretty fascinating film.
And Leilani, we have a link up at Stephanie Miller Show Facebook, so go there.
And at stephaniemiller.com as well, so everywhere.
Yeah, so after what? What's that, Flipper? He says, thank you, Leilani. Thank you for all you've done for us and all you're doing for the planet. It's fascinating stuff, and thanks so much for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. We will talk to you soon, I hope.
I hope so.
All right. Yay. There she goes. All right. Yay.
What? Boo?
Sorry, I meant to hit the applause.
And she's smoking hot.
If she's ever in L.A., we can have her. Right, she's smoking hot. Jim wants her in studio. I bet she could get here in like 4 minutes.
Probably.
Right? From anywhere.
Yeah. And she may find you to be pleasant.
Jimmy Carter thought you were pleasant.
Jimmy Carter's right about a lot of things. 21 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
There's a tea party in her pants, and you're invited. Call now, 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
You know you got me. With your pistol, shot me. And I'm here helplessly in love and nothing can stop me.
No, don't fuck with
me. Stephanie Miller.
Don't do it. Do not do it. All right. Well, I did want the new Tesla SUV after talking to Leilani, but now I need this for my birthday. It's the new life-size David Hasselhoff mannequin.
That's horrifying. Is horrifying.
Anatomically correct?
Look at that. Apparently.
Oh, I see.
Look at that.
It's got his... Baywatch shorts on, at least.
You can still bid on that. That's still available. Okie dokie. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Bob,
don't hassle the Hoff.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. Come on, that's a conversation starter at a party, isn't it? But I'm gonna use that instead of a coffee table in my living room.
I'll bet you could put a glass, a big piece of glass.
Glass on top of it.
Yeah, exactly, and use it as a dining room table. Can you imagine having a banquet on that?
Right. Or maybe, yes, you could have that as your dining room table and kit the car as your coffee table in the living room.
Or as your bed instead
of... Right.
Your own race car bed.
Yeah.
See, Leilani probably wants that. Yeah. Okay, Bob in Connecticut, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Stephanie. Love you guys.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm here.
Yes, Bob, go ahead. Right, this is where you talk now.
Yeah, I'm talking. Do you hear me?
Yes. Do you have a point of some sort?
Roger.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that. There's a bit of a misconnection there. Yeah, I heard the talk about the Tesla, and I drive a Chevy Volt, which is an extended-range electric. And the Tesla is terrific. In fact, in my hometown, there must be at least 100 of them here, pretty well off town. But and it's a terrific car, but we just a bit of dose of reality. The charging network isn't going to be built out for another 5 or 6 to even 10 years. And even then, it takes 20 minutes to charge the car on a supercharger up to about 80%. So it's not the answer yet.
Right, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be working toward it. That's what I mean when people go, it's not really workable. It's if you read even just this climate change report, it's like, well, we better get friggin' working on something because... Well, yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. And what makes it more what I'm driving right now is a Chevy Volt, which will go, it's electric, an extended range electric. Right. It'll go up to 40 miles on its batteries with no emissions whatsoever, and I charge it up every night.
Good for you.
And once you go beyond that range, the engine comes on, charges the batteries, and still gets 37 miles to the gallon. So
right.
I net out, in my experience, at over 100 miles to the gallon.
Right.
But it's a bridge technology is what I'm saying. We need bridge technology.
No, I get it. I get it. I get it. When we were saying I'd be the perfect candidate because I don't go anywhere.
No, you don't.
So you know really the new embarrassing thing for me right now? It's because we did this a couple weeks ago. I went out and read the mileage on my car.
Yeah, we did.
Which is, what is it, 2006?
It's like 45,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's 2006.
Sad. Yeah, it's sad. It's very sad. See, but this will be the new thing when I get my Tesla at some point.
Yeah.
When I pay off the studio in 1970. Anyway, my point is, yeah, that'll be the new thing. I'll have to charge it like once a year, and then I'll be an even bigger loser than the mileage on my gas-powered car now, right?
Right.
Be like, really? You only drove 20 miles in the entire year?
That's how far it takes to go to a liquor barn.
There you go. 29 minutes after the hour. Bob Seska next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
You are so cool.
It's about time someone noticed.
Stephanie Miller, Pleasant. Says Jimmy Carter.
Someone called and says you're Pleasant.
You're going to use that in all of our billboards, man.
I wonder what he'd say about Leilani Munter. Not in front of Rosalind.
Oh, boy. He won't make it to 70 years. He'll stop right at 68 years.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Wonderful.
Right. Way to go, Steph. All right, 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. So I saw this story, and, you know, I think it here. Bob Seska writes it there.
Yep.
But you've heard about this, right? Because, of course, I thought, oh, we're going down with him. Me and my Jim Ward, Kim Jong-un impression. on the Wednesday's Colbert Report, first of all, as Bob points out, he's playing a satirical character.
Right.
He made fun of Washington Redskins owners Dan Snyder's recently announced Washington Redskins Original Americans Foundation, which is a true thing. Like, he's trying to make up for his horribly racist named team. The Colbert Report had tweeted, I guess, I'll talk to Bob about this, but I guess he had said that he didn't send it himself. It was not written by him.
It was sent by the show.
By the show, yeah. But it just said, I am willing to show Asian community I care by introducing the Ching Chong Ding Dong Foundation for Sensitivity to Orientals or whatever.
Which is highlighting the ridiculousness of what...
Right. So... Jim
it's
laughed
parody.
Because that's what people do when you get parody.
And if you understand Stephen Colbert, you know that he probably stole it from me. But
yes, and it's not that we have, and we've dealt with this exact same thing when you used to do the Kim Jong Il impression.
Used to.
Okay,
he still does it.
Right,
Kim Jong Un. It's completely different.
Right, Kim Jong Un's completely different. But anyway, it's just the same thing. We're like. Jim is not a racist. It's like if we are offending some North Korean dictators, we apologize, you know. But, like, first of all, as Jim will say as an impressionist, you know, not everyone sounds exactly the same. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily racist when you're, you know.
Mocking a particular Nimrod.
Right,
such as,
exactly.
The Kims.
It is offensive to that particular Nimrod.
Right, and I don't mean Kardashian.
All right. So Bob Seska joins us now. Good morning, Bob Seska.
Hello.
Oh, this is one of our favorite subjects.
Yeah. I mean, if you're in the business of show, this is something that where, you know, I think anyone who does a comedy show, does a morning radio show for that matter, when that crosses the streams with Twitter, there can be disastrous results now, and clearly that happened last week with Stephen
Colbert. And one of the things you point out that I love the best in this is the real racist, Dan Snyder, escaped unscathed because Stephen Colbert is taking all the heat for this, right?
Yeah, that's right. Last night on the Colbert Report, I mean, Stephen Colbert did an epic response. I think he took his entire show, including hosting the founder of Twitter on his show last night, and he said, you know, he finished the first segment of the show by saying, something about Dan Snyder's foundation and saying he hasn't heard shit about that.
Wow.
Oh, Bob. We can't say that on our little morning radio show.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I forgot. Sorry.
All right. We had to dump that.
Now there's a hashtag cancel Stephanie Miller.
There you go. Yeah, thanks a lot, Bob. But, you know, you make the larger point here. You say one of my biggest gripes with the extreme flanks of the political debate is this. Neither the far left or the far right appears capable of modulating their respective screeching. This is not only self-marginalizes both wings, but all of the indiscriminate shouting tends to bleed together into kind of a monotonous white noise, resulting in actual decision makers shrugging them off, saying, oh, it's just the flanks shouting like always, nothing to see here. And as you talk about, the social media, of course, has made it worse. Facebook and especially Twitter is a well-known nuance-free zone. As you say.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to take a strong stand on your pet issues or the things that you believe in. I think that's important. But it's another thing entirely to just constantly screech about it, to not ever modulate the tone of that activism. And I think realistically, political reality dictates that we sometimes quiet down a little bit, and that we sometimes, pursue our agenda in a way that isn't constantly screeching, that isn't constantly overreacting to things. And I think what's happened is that social media has amplified all of that.
See, this is why you and I get referred to as Obama apologists. But as you say, any movement that's interested in actually getting things done or influencing quarters of power, you make a great point. Case in point, is President Obama more willing to listen to Glenn Greenwald, who makes it a point of vocally dismissing the president as a war criminal and a baby killer, or Rachel Maddow, who mixes the reasonable, thoughtful criticism of the president with credit where credit is due? And I think that is just a point that not enough people make, Bob.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you either, if you're not screeching, you're an apologist.
Right.
And that's wrong. I mean, history and political reality dictates the exact opposite of that. I mean, if you want to make any progress, I mean, what in the history, taking the president as an example, what in the history of his life or his political career shows that yelling at him gets anywhere? Clearly, he said at the beginning of his administration he wants to be pushed, but pushing doesn't mean screaming indiscriminately at him about every last thing and calling him a war criminal and setting up a war crimes tribunal at The Hague. You know, I think what he means by pushing him is to make a strong case for your point of view, and that is a more thoughtful and generally more rational way to go about
it. But you make a great point about Stephen Colbert, and we're just referencing it because we've been a victim of it. I mean, we've had threats of boycott or cancellation or whatever, and I'm like, oh, really, you're going to take us off the air? So only the real racists like Rush Limbaugh are going to be left on the air. And you say, you know, Stephen Colbert is one of the people who have, obviously been a champion, spoken out against those who market in hatred, intolerance, or racism. That's the whole point of his character. And you say he's been unfairly smeared as an enemy of tolerance by nuance-blind Twitter hashtag activists. And you say the intention here was to scold Snyder's obvious tone deafness, the inclusion of Redskins in the name of a charity aimed at helping Native Americans. So beyond that, it's just sort of missing the comedy point entirely, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think satire, comedy, I mean, just laughter in general is a fantastic way to pursue a particular message. And I think that, I mean, the whole idea of satire is to skewer the corridors of power without, necessarily pissing everyone off. But I mean, I think that in this case that actually happened. But I mean, Stephen Colbert is easily one of the most gifted minds that has come along in terms of satire in a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And if you take away that weapon against all of these things that he's talking about on his show, then you're actually shooting yourself in the foot. It doesn't make any sense to me.
You remember liberals were in an orgasm over, remember when he did the thing right to President Bush's face? And so you can't, like, cheer that and then go, oh, well, this particular thing offended me. You're right. It's the same vein of satire.
Right.
That you know, and as you say, if his satirical charity wasn't at all offensive, how could it ever adequately comment on the offensiveness of Redskins?
Exactly.
That's the point of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, clearly, Suey Park, who started the hashtag, and everyone who joined in with her,
and #cancel Colbert, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they haven't seen the show. It's been on since 2005. You know, at least, I mean, I'm sure some of them have seen the show, but it sounds like they haven't, because
I haven't seen it, but I just know it's bad.
Yeah, it's not the first time this has happened. I mean, this is not the first joke that he's had where he exaggerates the views of some idiot, you know, to make a point about that idiot. You know, whether it's, you know, whenever someone says, whether it's Bill O'Reilly or Rush Limbaugh or whoever says, oh yeah, I've got lots of black friends. Well, Stephen Colbert wheels out that picture of him standing next to a black guy pointing at him with a big grin on his face. I mean, this is what he does. I mean, Ching Chong Ding Dong has been a character on that show since 2005, and it's always, always, always in the context of skewering racially insensitive idiots.
Oh,
yeah,
context.
I've told this story before, Bob, but one of my favorite notes ever from a television executive was he said to us, do you have to make fun of things?
Yeah. Well,
I remember my head comedy writer was like, well, yes. Yes, comedy has targets.
Yeah.
I mean, but you say this is also, you know, there's a fine lineage starting with George Carlin. You talk about Louis C.K., you know, using offensive words in the context of satire.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of them are words you can't say on the radio, I'm now discovering.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, well, F that.
Yeah, I mean, this is... well, obviously I know that, but I mean, so it's a long tradition of just exaggerating this language, exaggerating the points of view of people who, you know, are idiots when it comes to race and other issues. George Carlin is Seven Deadly Words, you know, Bill Hicks, Louis C.K., I mean, on down to Patton Oswalt and many others. This, you know, again, you take this away, you take away this weapon, and you're left with nothing but hashtags.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Clearly, cancel Colbert did not cancel Colbert.
Yeah,
right.
And it's, as you say, he is not the enemy. And I just, you know, I love the larger point because obviously, you know, speaks to me. You say it reminds me of every time the president doesn't fall in line with every far-left pet issue, inciting demands for impeachment, primary challenges, or wartime tribunals, even though Obama is objectively the closest thing the far-left has ever had to an ally in the White House, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I've been a big fan of Twitter. I much prefer Twitter over Facebook. But this week, I'm second guessing that point of view, because I mean, I really think that Twitter in this case has damaged the discourse. The lack of nuance, the inability, well, I mean, Stephen Colbert pointed out last night on his show that you know, whoever knew that something with only 140 characters would generate misunderstandings?
Yeah, but I think, you know, it really, that larger point is so well taken, Bob, in an election year. I mean, and we've talked about this before on the show, but perfect example, you know, is the during the primary with Clinton and Obama. A lot of, most of us in progressive radio were for Obama because he was more farther left, and that's the irony of the far left attacking us now.
Right?
As Obama apologists, because you're like, wait a minute. And that, I remember back then, threats of boycotts and, you know, trying to get us canceled off radio stations. You're like, wait a minute. So then in the general election, you're going to be left with only right-wing radio because you didn't like that, you know, your primary candidate wasn't, you know, the choice of some of the progressive hosts. I mean, it just, that I think is just so self-defeating. We really
demand ideological purity or nothing.
Yeah, and you have to demand it in 140 characters.
Right.
But you know what?
Yeah.
I think the most perfect recent example, Bob, that we've talked about on the show is how Ed Schultz came around on the Keystone Pipeline to, you know, but not through, believe me, knowing Ed, not through people being crappy to him and shouting at him. It's, you know, that he went and talked to people and they talked to him respectfully and he changed his mind. You
exactly.
Know?
And, you know, I mean, in a broader sense, I just get really concerned when people begin to rage against comedians, rage against satire, I mean, on a personal level, I mean, I have this other career where I've done for many, many years, I've done animated cartoons that are satirical and attack many, many people, from Metallica to Dick Vitale to politicians. And
wow. And Dick Vitale, how dare you, sir?
Yeah,
that's a bridge too far.
I mean, I did a cartoon maybe 10 or 13 years ago on the internet where Dick Vitale during March Madness, you know, saying that he could continue his pre-game report with a rusty farm tool lodged in his skull. He's just that enthusiastic about talking about basketball. And Dick Vitale got very, very angry about that and demanded that I take it down and it just didn't understand that this only helps Dick Vitale, actually. This doesn't, you know, this raises his visibility and it's not necessarily saying that we ought to stick a rusty farm tool in his head. This is just underscoring his enthusiasm for basketball.
I'm glad President Lincoln wasn't around to see my cartoon, The Hard Drinking Lincoln, which I did.
Right. Right. He needed that like he needed a hole in the head.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, you know what we
say on this show, Bob? We say, you know.
Lord, the rod up that man's butt must have a rod up its butt.
Everybody just relax. Relax your sphincter.
Yes, exactly. It's just a great way to make a point with laughter. Because, I mean, once the laughter actually dies down, and actually, in the case of Stephen Colbert and others, an audience can kind of evaluate on their own terms in a way that helps the medicine go down.
They're our greatest teachers. That's what they always say. You know, when you make people laugh, they don't realize they might have learned something, you know, because
exactly.
They don't feel like they're getting, you know, beaten over the head with talking points.
I'm not sure what people learned when I had Lincoln barf into his stovepipe hat and say, Scrapple! When did I eat Scrapple?
But it's funny.
And by the way, nothing is less funny than talking about comedy.
Exactly.
I know, exactly. So let's stop. I love you, Bob. See you next week.
Bye, Steph.
All right, bye-bye. There's nothing funnier than explaining comedy.
Right.
Okay, 48
see
minutes.
What I meant to say. That was your dad's job with Barry.
There you go. 48 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's not radio. It's Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Oh, yeah. Kevin in Chicago says, Steph, methinks old Jimmy Carter was lusting after Steph in his heart this morning.
Aww.
You think? Proving how wonderful it is to be old and unaware of lifestyle realities sometimes. True. Old guys flirt with me a lot. They have no idea.
No idea.
That I'm that way. By the way, if I wasn't gay, this just made me gayer. This picture of Louis Gohmert. Doesn't it just look like he's saying herp and derp at the same time?
Oh, no. I just crapped my pants again. I can't believe I crapped my pants twice in one day.
Louis Gohmert, separation of church and state means church plays a role in the state.
No, just the opposite.
It kind of means the opposite.
He's such a...
Gohmert.
God, stop being so Gohmerty. Yikes. All right, kids, Rocky Mountain Mike, who is the awesome with the awesome sauce, talks about how awesome our fans are. It is true. Sexy liberals are so awesome. Steph, your fans are awesome. Someone on Twitter last night asked if I was going to the Chicago show. I said I couldn't afford it at this time. He offered me a free buddy pass on Schmelta Airlines.
Oh,
Schmelta. How awesome are your fans?
I finally get to meet Rocky Mountain Mike.
Well, I don't know if he's... Oh. He doesn't know if he can do it or
I
not.
Hope he can. That
if he can,
cool.
I hope he has a better flight than I did to Madison this past weekend.
What a beautiful day. Heading to the airport to go to Madison, Wisconsin.
Right.
Steffi was just trying to get on a plane.
Right.
6 a.m. Got plenty of time. But every time she'd get
to the
last
minute.
Gate, they'd slam the doors in her face. I can hear Steffi cursing the sky. Well, it was a crap show.
Are you kidding me?
But
I gotta get
she made it to the Barrymore in time.
Oh my God, are you kidding me? You want me to run through this airport again on my tiny brittle bird legs?
Mommy, help me.
You son of a mother.
Thank you.
That was kind of Seska-esque there on that. You know.
Yeah.
That last one.
Woo!
That was...
almost missed that one. Okay. Odin in Florida, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi. Is that, am I saying that right?
You're saying it right. It's absolutely right, yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
I just wanted... Sometimes it seems like there's nuance that's missing in discussion. I followed Suey Park for a long time on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And to say that, oh, well, people don't get sarcasm. It's very...
Satire. Not sarcasm.
Two different things.
Or satire, or whatever. To say that there's a group of people that simply just, we don't get sarcasm or satire. That's incredibly... Can it be right that some people were actually, honestly offended by the language because...
Right, people that don't get satire. Just saying. Because that's the whole point of satire. He's playing a character, right? You get that.
I know that. And don't take this the wrong way, but that sounds a lot like whitesplaining. You don't get the satire from The Onion. Because when they called her that, it was just satire. Let me explain satire
to you.
Obviously, you don't understand.
Wait, satire. Who called who what?
When the whole rock and roll with The Onion, with Quavonjene Wallace. There was a lot of disproportionately white people who were coming out saying, well, thing is, black people just don't understand satire. Or maybe they haven't read The Onion. Yes.
You do understand that he was using satire in this case to put down people who are actually racist.
Right.
Right?
Here's what I get.
So you don't get that?
No, of course I get it.
Okay,
but
so what's the problem with it then?
I get that it was a white guy using quote-unquote satire to make jokes about Dan Snyder, while while also deriding another marginalized group.
He wasn't deriding anybody.
That was the point. Golly, I'm so sorry. We're out of time, aren't you, Chris?
Shoot.
If you'd like to see the actual kind of satire, go to sexyliberal.com, sexyliberal on Facebook, to find out the correct links for all those upcoming shows and not the scam sites and the people
you just don't get sarcasm
are trying to sabotage us because they don't get satire. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.